Hello, and welcome to episode number 227 of the Apologue podcast, the Tuesday edition. Today's podcast is brought to you by BetterHelp.com. Get affordable, private, online counseling anytime, anywhere. Talk with a licensed professional therapist online, and you can get a seven-day free trial by going to BetterHelp.com/Apologue, and you can use the code word Apologue when you start that seven-day trial. I'd like to thank everybody for shopping on Amazon, supporting the show. You too can do that. You can go to apologue.ca/Amazon or apologue.ca/USAmazon. You can do the old-fashioned way too by going to apologue.ca, click on those banners located on the right side, and every time you shop, you will be supporting the show. Bookmark the links, and it really does help. It costs you no extra money too. Also, thanks everybody for supporting me on Patreon. You can go to patreon.com/apologue. patreon.com/APOLOGUE. You can pledge as much or as little as you want on a monthly basis to help with hosting and gas fees, and it costs you no extra money. Go buy a t-shirt by going to apologue.ca/shop. Don't forget to subscribe, rate, and view the show on iTunes. Like the show on Facebook by going to facebook.com/apologuepod. Follow me on Twitter at simonhead666. And one last thing before I go, I would like you to please help me and support my 200-kilometer bike ride, bicycle ride from Toronto to Niagara Falls. It's called the Ride to Conquer Cancer. I think it's a North American thing. And cancer is a worldwide problem, and we all need to deal with it. Please pledge, and you can see where my link is below in this description. And thank you so much for whoever has already pledged. I really appreciate it. And I have to come up with a certain amount of money, and I have to do a 200-kilometer ride. So all you have to do is pledge $10. All right? Okay. Thanks, everybody. Today on the show, I have Mr. John Redman, who is the founder and conspirator of Drawing Music, which is a label, you can go to this label called lovesickbombs.com and you can learn all about it. And basically what it is, it's graphic artists working with musicians. And therefore they are creating art from music and music from art. And it's a really, really cool idea and super ambitious. And we talked a lot about what it is to try to make a go in the music industry. I give you props, John, for coming up with something that it's all inclusive. And they actually put out a song called Dad Rock, which is exactly what I do, and you'll hear it later on in the podcast. So here he is, Mr. John Redman, on the Apologue Podcast. I looked over the Lovesick Bombs Drawing Music website, and it's super ambitious.
I think so.
So how did it all come to be? That's probably the stock question of all of them.
It started with me really wanting to form my own supergroup of local bands that I had booked, and I was writing songs and knew these bands and had my favorite players of those bands and thought, I would like to put a band together with these guys. Mm-hmm. Then simultaneously, kind of got the idea of tapping comic book artists to do songs off or pictures off what these guys created.
Yeah.
That was me. So the drummer of Night Surf is a beast. His name's Kyle. He's just a fucking drum smasher. The lead singer of Habits, 2 years ago, they put out my favorite EP that I've listened to for like the last 5 years, like Chris Criswell's acoustic record and these guys' Habits. My wife and I just listened to it nonstop. So the singer of Habits, and then Van Saters from Asbury Park, the singer of that band, is a great songwriter and singer. So that's kind of the idea of it. Mm-hmm. So brought everybody together, taught them the songs, went into the studio and made the recordings.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, this is just one song is out right now, right? Or is there a whole album?
No, one song at a time as I get the artwork finalized and printed. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And so it's on a regular basis. So whenever you're going to have is it every week? Is it every month? Is there no schedule?
The next song's out in 2 weeks, which is, and then the next one's out in a month. Mm-hmm. And then after that, probably every 2 weeks.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And then what's been awesome about just the first one coming out is folks that I've known from the past and other people have reached out to say, hey, what's going on with the next thing? So I'm super stoked on this kid who sent me some art. Mm-hmm. And wants to illustrate whatever the next song is. So I'm hoping it kind of just keeps going.
Yeah, actually, I was so excited. Actually, I'm good friends with Mr. Chai Pig from SNFU. And I immediately sent this idea, your website link, to Dave Bacon, who's the band's manager and bass player. And I said, you got to get Chai on this because he's a tough guy to sort of wrangle. But he's, I mean, it, nothing says punk rock and art more than Chai Pig.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
That's super awesome.
Yeah. Yeah. And so, I mean, the way the music business is going, it takes neat ideas like this to rejuvenate how people consume stuff, right?
I would totally agree. Well, and it's just more collaborative, right? Everybody's making music in their cave right now, and you kind of just send it out to the world and hope somebody connects with it. And if you even connect with one person, it's dope because you just made it in your room. Mm-hmm. And some of those room recordings are now the biggest songs in the world, right? Which just the the flattening of the music industry in general is amazing. Yeah. I love that.
Yeah.
However, it does kind of, it has kind of formulated an isolative culture, right? Like loner rock.
Yeah.
But that's where this project, and now if I can get it to kick off in any capacity, I want to just bring in more and more and more people, right? Like I had a shit ton of musicians play on this record. Some of them just came in, drank beer all day, played one guitar solo and dipped, but it was all about the experience of recording it, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. And we're the idea of collaborating in music is, like you said, it's a tough thing because everybody has a computer, they have a sound card, they have a few microphones, they make their songs and they sort of throw it on Bandcamp and that's it. You know what I mean? And even bands that are sort of have notoriety do stuff like that. It just needs to somehow, we're in a logjam of trying to create a revolution of sorts that doesn't use the old rules. And that's sort of what punk rock is.
Here's a question for you. Uh-huh. Do you think there's a super important band on the horizon that's going to what's the next kind of Beatles or Nirvana or whatever? Like, do you think we're far beyond ever having that big important record again because it's so diversified? Or do you think it's coming?
It's tough to say based on where technology is and how everybody has about 2 minutes worth of fame as opposed to 15 now. So really latching onto something usually the most influential stuff is like when you're like 10 to 15 years old, that type of music is music that sort of you carry in your heart and it doesn't matter what type of musical genres come and go. You always have that style with you. And whatever resonates with music has to resonate that inner 12-year-old in you, you know, and that's my belief. But I don't know. It's because everything is, there's like a demand for singles and there's a demand for popularity and there's a demand for like the model is always changing. The landscape is changing. So to me, I don't think there will ever be another Nirvana, Green Day, Offspring, I don't know. It's tough. Led Zeppelin, you know, like stuff that really made an impact in music. What are your thoughts?
Kind of the same. We're going to get blindsided by something super special, which would be
amazing.
Really awesome.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
But it does seem kind of like my older brothers have kids that are at the age when I got into punk rock as a kid, and a lot of those seminal bands came out. Mm-hmm. And kind of seeing the musical landscape through their world and how everyone's competing for their attention versus us who are like mowing lawns, saving money and buying CDs.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
It seems impossible for something to break through on just a pure band level. Like the way the shit that, was Lines in the Sand and super impactful for our generation, or at least mine. But it would also be amazing if some like fucking badass, super important band crossed genres and did something really big.
Yeah, no, I
would love to see that.
Yeah, me too. And it always comes without, like, I've always sort of said, like, what makes popular music popular? And I've always sort of said, well, there needs to be 50 million people who think the same thing and feel the same way. So therefore, sort of socioeconomic landscape usually determines what type of music people want to listen to. And I think, I mean, with what's happening down south of Canada, I think it could be anything like now, because when people get angry, they write passionate music. It's tough to be passionate about something when everything is awesome. You know, so when you make that great song, it needs to say something, and people it needs to resonate with at least 5 million people before it snowballs into what Green Day and Nirvana, sort of what they did.
That was super smart.
Yeah.
I had never thought about the fact of popular music actually being driven. I always think of the music driving the culture, but it's totally, what did you say? You need about 50,000 people who think the same way about something.
Something like that. Or even a million, you know, because then it snowballs, because then and everybody else sort of thinks the same way, you know, and you, whatever music you put into the, like if Nirvana put Smells Like Teen Spirit out in 1989, it probably wouldn't have been that great record. Because people are like, fuck, man, we want Guns N' Roses.
No one was tired of Poison enough yet.
Yeah, it's true. That's true. Yeah, still tired of Poison. But I think because it's really tough, because I talked to a lot of people in the music business who have tried to create magic in a bottle like twice. You know what I mean? Like they've tried to. They got something, and then all of a sudden they tried to recreate it again, whether they're a record industry person or they're a musician. It's really tough. It's all by accident. And a lot of people tried, like in the early 2000s, to engineer what the music industry was going to be. And it failed miserably because nobody saw like Napster coming along, and nobody saw like downloading, and nobody got on it fast enough. And then it was too late.
Good. Right?
Yeah.
I mean, thankfully, there's, you know, you've got 100, if you look at a map of 150 years or whatever, it's like traveling minstrels and professional musicians. Then they find out how to capture sound on wax. And there's just this tiny little commerce fucking spike and drop.
Mm-hmm.
And now it's back to the people who weren't like me as a kid. I was a tourist.
Yeah.
I toured and I tried to be in a rock and roll band, but I had options and I had other things I was interested in. It wasn't my end all be all drop out of school in eighth grade to be in a punk rock band.
Mm-hmm,
right.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
Now there's a golden wave of live rock and roll, right? Like the kid, like I always, do you know the Metzingers at all? The Metzingers? Sorry.
Yes, I do. Yeah.
So they have been on the road forever and have continued to just get obnoxiously good live, right? Yeah. And so have so many other amazing bands because they're not tourists. They're not like, well, if this pays off my college loan debt and I can marry my girlfriend. Mm-hmm. They're like, just, this is what they do.
Yeah.
And the death of the music industry created all these new kids that are way more real mm-hmm. than myself and the musicians I came up with.
Yeah.
Who had ripcords.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, see, that's an interesting thing, because that's sort of like the backbone of this whole show, really, is about people who have been doing it a while and understand where they sit in all of it. Because when, like, I'm in the same boat as you. I had a band. I toured. I tried. You know what I mean? I starved. I dumpster dived. I did all the stupid things that stupid bands do on tour. But the fact that when I got home and I met my now wife, I have two children, I have a mortgage, there is sort of that ripcord really was pulled, because I don't think I would be alive today at the age of 40, going 49 this year. I don't think I'd be alive to tell the story of how punk rock I was.
Totally.
Yeah,
it would. I mean, did you get the SoundCloud links of the songs?
I got Dad Rock, and that's the song I have. So
okay, I'll send you the SoundCloud links.
Please do.
And I did. I rewrote All My Rowdy Friends Have Settled Down, and Chris Criswell from the Flatliner sang on it.
Oh, cool.
That one's personally, like, the whole record is about fucking kind of the aging process. But then simultaneously, the record got done, and I was like, ah, cool, another record. But then I got super turned on by the art,
yeah.
which is my whole thing now. Mm-hmm. And there is so much out there. Mm-hmm. It's a, it's like you scratch the surface, you keep going straight down in terms of how much amazing graphic art is out there.
Yeah.
As you can imagine, just as many great unlooked at bands, there's so many artists out there that are doing super awesome shit.
Yeah, yeah. And the thing about the record industry, too, is as it was a young person's game when I was in my 30s, and people said, you're too old to make a popular record in Canada or in North America, you know. And when I went to Europe, people didn't really care about the age, but there was a shelf life of how long I could do what I was going to do. But I always said this, and I'll say it again. I mean, when you're 20 years old, you write a good song, but when you're 47, you're going to write even better songs. I mean, look at Elvis Costello. He writes better songs every time he puts a record out, and he never stagnates, you know, and because he keeps getting older, as well as more educated, as well as just better at your craft.
As long as you're in his audience, I totally agree.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
As long as you're not 20.
Yeah, 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 for sure.
Because if you're 20, all you want to hear about is heartbreak because your girlfriend just broke up with you.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But I
mean, which none of us give a shit about anymore.
No, yeah, that's true. You know, but you know, I you know, being married.
But
with,
yes, but let me just say, I totally agree with you.
Yeah.
Like Louis C.K. says, it took him 25 years to get good at comedy. I feel like I see that everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
Like I really feel like there's a ton of people in their artistic peak in their 40s.
Yeah. Yeah. Because it's the insight and the perspective. It's got nothing to do with the hook at that point, you know.
Well, also, it's our generation's fucking Peter Pan syndrome, man. How to get my shit together forever,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
None of us took our art seriously until we got everything else straightened out.
Yeah, that's totally true. And I, you know, as a personally, I sort of slowed down on music to be more of a family person, and. It's interesting because well, it's not interesting, but it is weird because the 28-year-old in me would go, you fucking quitter, you know, but I'm not.
Yeah.
I'm not.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. Yeah.
What are you listening to? Are you listening to anything good right now?
I just got into Russian Girlfriends for the first time. I don't know if you've heard of that band.
Nope.
What else did I get? I got my, you know, it's weird. I sort of go back and forth. There's a band up here called the Alpacas that I really like. They're sort of like, I don't know. I'm always a big fan of, like, oh, I'm just looking at them. You heard of a band called Boys Night Out?
No.
Yeah, they were on Ferret Records for a while, and they're on Good Fight Music, which is, I think, a version of, I don't know, man. Like, I'm sort of like, I love like Get Up Kids and all that sort of original type of whatever became whatever people started calling emo, I guess.
I got a story. I got a Get Up Kids story for
cool.
you.
Oh, cool. Yeah, for sure.
My wife, who was just my roommate in 98, Dancehall Crushers, MXPX, Get Up Kids, Cooter. Mm-hmm. If you remember Cooter,
yeah,
they became Autopilot Off.
Yes, they played up here once. I think they played up here at one point. Cooter, yeah.
I don't know if you remember that tour specifically, but I was a crazy MXPX fan, Get Up Kids fan. Dancehall Crashers were headlining. Mm-hmm. Anyway, I'm 42. I was 19, mm-hmm. I think,
mm-hmm.
or 18, 19. Anyway, so I fucking told the girl that I went to the show with, who's now my wife, who was like, I was getting ready to move into a place with her and a shitload of other people. I told her, I was like, oh, I'm going to marry the singer from Dancehall Crashers. We go to the show, we get split up, don't see her for the whole show, come back. She's driving us home. The singer of Dancehall Crashers is sitting on my trunk. And my wife is like, oh, hey, he had a question for you. It's, hey, look who it is. And she like humiliates me in front of the singer of the Dancehall Crashers. I'm like, oh, no, never mind. It's anyway, but an awesome lineup.
Yeah,
as well.
Yeah, for sure. Did you know that the Get Up Kids are putting out a new record in 1 month from now?
Yes.
That's
yeah. I'm a Get Up Kids head.
That Satellite song is, oh my God. They just keep getting better and better. It's unbelievable.
I just want them to keep. I want everybody to keep at it.
Yeah, yeah. Because there was a while where there was a while where they kind of just sort of went, yeah, we're not going to do much anymore. And there was like a good,
I get it.
Yeah, for
young
sure.
kids.
Yeah.
They're too busy.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, so that's another thing about being a dad. I have teenagers now. Well, my daughter is going to be turning 13. My son is 16.
Oh,
I know. He just went for a drive in my car with my
no
wife.
Thanks, buddy.
I know, right? Jesus Christ. And he's my son, too.
My daughter's six. My brother's teenagers make life look terrible.
Oh. Yeah, listen. Well, we could talk all day all night about that, but I think there's more time to go see shows now, you know, as a, you know, the trouble is sort of getting the motivation to sort of get in the car and drive an hour into the city to go see it, but it's possible, you know what I mean? It's possible to do that.
Yes. Yeah, they're a little more on autopilot.
Yeah. Yeah, you don't need to constantly worry if they're breathing or, you know.
Yep.
Yeah. So when you had kids, did you consider music to be sort of made you put it on the back burner? Is that because that's sort of a normal thing?
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, not immediately, like bad, like learn everything too late, like a dummy rock kid. You know, like I should have tapered it off earlier, but. Yeah, absolutely. That's what happens.
Yeah, I'm with you. I had a 2-year-old, and I went to Europe on tour for 30 days.
And that, you fucking dick.
I know. That was the bad thing to do.
Yeah.
It took me a good five years to get back from that. You know what I mean?
Man.
That could have been it. Could have been everything.
I'm not trying to sales guy this back to the song we put out, the first song in print, but. It, old habits die hard, right?
Yeah. Like the video too, because the video is all the old haunts. Like, I think I've been to probably 90% of those.
I wanted
venues.
To see how many people. I would love to know how many people could spot. Like, I booked for Bottom the Hill in San Francisco.
No
I was
way,
a junior booker there.
When,
I lived around the corner.
What years?
2003 or 2002 through 2005.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah, that was way after me.
I donated all of, like, I donated tons of time there. Like, I lived around the corner, so I just, you know, I booked shows and fucking did security or whatever. And I went to the Bottom of the Hill Christmas party. They rented this giant fucking palace kind of spot in the Alps, and it was all the Bottom of the Hill people. And they're like, hey, do you want to go? And I was like, holy shit, I'm in.
Wow.
Because I've always worshipped venues as much as bands. The Parkside in San Francisco,
yep.
On the Hill in San Francisco, Knitting Factory in New York, both Knitting Factories.
Yep.
Released down here. Then the Gutter and Matchless and
Continental, Coney Island High.
Right. Oh, in Chicago, yeah.
No, Continental was in New York. It was in Manhattan.
Oh, yeah. Oh, the Continental here.
Yeah, and then...
Yeah.
Is that still open?
No, long gone.
Yeah. Because one of my favorite bands, Ruth, did like a week of shows there. Like they play every week. They did a residency there before they put out that Epitaph release in the 90s. And
I was so many years from being here.
Yeah. So you grew up in San Francisco.
Midwest,
yeah. 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 So you grew up in San Francisco area or Bay Area?
No. I lived in Texas until I was like 14 and I moved to Michigan.
Mm-hmm.
And then the college I went to, I met my wife and a band and 11 other people desperate to get out of Michigan. So we graduated college and immediately moved to San Francisco.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. I was in San Francisco playing music and being a kid. And then I moved to Hawaii.
Whoa.
With my wife, girlfriend at the time. And we lived in the North Shore of Oahu. And then we moved to Brooklyn about 13 years ago.
That's a culture shock.
Yes. Well, I mean, it was closer to San Francisco.
But yeah.
Hawaii is the best place to live for about 4 months.
Oh, really? Yeah. Well, yeah. I spent about 3 hours there on my way to Australia when I was on tour with SNFU. But I didn't get outside because they kept us inside. But we were almost going to play there with, which band?
What was your band?
Well, I used to do sound for SNFU. I was their sound guy from 1995 till around 2001. I was their front of house sound guy. I had a band in the early 90s called Trigger Happy that I played in, which is a Toronto based band. And then I moved to Winnipeg and joined another band called Red Fisher. In the sort of late 90s, I started my own band called Foursquare and put out some records in Europe on a label called Bad Taste Records. And we toured Europe more than we toured North America because we were too old.
That's the way to do it.
Yeah, too old. I have a band right now called the Fairmounts. So it's a beer league band. We play shows here and there and have a good time. And it's fun.
Beer league. Is that a term? Is beer league band a term?
Yeah. Well, you know who invented that name is actually, Steve Carroll from the Weaker Thans invented. He mentioned it and I totally stole it. Cause it's the best name for a part-time band.
God damn it, man. That's a fucking genre. That's fucking, you know, when I was like, it's loner rock.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah,
that's
yeah.
Like me and my other fucking dad friends who never see anybody but are making records everywhere we can.
Mm.
But Beer League is so much better.
Did you ever go to like parent teacher meetings and meet other parents and go like, God, I don't like any of you?
I was a special ed teacher for a decade. My wife and I were both special ed teachers.
Wow.
That's what we graduated with in college. And then that's what we did. So I always hated every parent. Especially before I had kids because I didn't understand nature versus nurture at all.
Mm-hmm.
So I thought every single kid was the representation of their parents, what their parents had done to them behaviorally.
Wow. Yeah.
And then you get... And then later, you kind of understand there's so much fucking programming, like DNA programming to it.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Now I give the parents a lot more of a pass.
Yeah, I just find when I sort of end up like in a gymnasium and it's sort of like a sort of a social event that I have nothing in common with the khaki pant wearing sports shirt kind of person that I just, for some reason, even though... I live in a relatively pretty nice neighborhood and I'm one of them, but I always find it like a bit weird when I'm like trying to, I don't know, trying to talk to somebody who's like a banker or a lawyer or something. It's weird.
Well, fuck, I live in the U.S. You don't know who is a Trump person from one person to the next. It's like finding out someone's a zombie in disguise. It's crazy.
Is it like Flash Thunder? You know, back in World War II, where you'd yell into the Flash and someone yelled Thunder, then you knew they were your friend? They should have a safe word. The Trumps and the Dems should have like a different...
It's really crazy, and it's super crazy when you stumble on one. And you're like, oh, fuck, you're crazy. And we're never going to be friends.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, you could be having a great hang with somebody, and then because the whole Trump thing, immediately it's like such a crazy tell. Mm. It's like a super basic tell that they are fucked up in some way.
There's no way to even meet in the middle either, because
anybody trying to see anybody's standpoint on Trump, at least in the Northeast, I don't know if you just have to. You have to melt in the not so smart land of Ohio and everywhere else. I don't know if you have to just be so sympathetic. You go, uh-huh, and you smile and nod. Mm-hmm. But at least in the bubble we live in, mm-hmm. You know, like a Trump supporter is immediately, you're like, oh, you're crazy.
Yeah.
You're a nutcase.
What do you think's going to happen in the next election? Do you think he's coming back? Do you think he'll be thrown in jail? Will he die? You do?
Yeah, I do.
Wow.
Okay. Yeah, I do.
I think he'll die of drinking too much Diet Coke, actually. I think that's what's going to happen.
I mean, if he offs himself with poor health, but I have absolutely, from my family being in Texas and my wife's family being in Michigan and us being New York City folks, I think that his base is stronger than ever.
That's insane.
And which means it can only go up from here.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, basically his I don't know if you keep up, you can even keep up with his madness, but
I try not to, but yeah.
In the last couple of days, he said that all the people crossing the border were going to get bussed up and sent to sanctuary cities, which is New York City. And, uh-huh. Portland and the liberal urban markets, and we're like, fuck you, we'll take him.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
But the thing that him even fucking putting shit out, like he's gonna bus people crossing the border to sanctuary cities, I mean, there's just, it's fantasy world. It's not legal, there's no budget, mm-hmm. there's no way to actually for it to happen. It's just whipping his base into a frenzy. He has never stopped promoting himself for president. He's still campaigning.
Yeah.
He's campaigning every day. Mm-hmm. It's so fucking crazy. Mm-hmm. Every time normal people in the States have a conversation, like, it's like, do we even talk about the craziness we're in? We have a mad king.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, and it was like when he first got into office, I interviewed Kevin Lyman from the Warped Tour, and he was so crestfallen. It was like, he's like, you don't know what's going to happen. he's like Nostradamus had seen the future, like, this is going to end very, very bad. And this was like, you know, 2.5 years ago, and it was like, this is only going to end in just horrible, 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 just fiery flames. And, you know, in Canada, we have three parties, four, you know, if we count the Green Party, but having just two parties, and that's the problem. That's the problem that America's in. You need that sort of that tiebreaker of sorts or something to balance it out a little bit. Whether they're even have a dog in the fight, it's good to have, you know, some choice.
The U.S. is on a spiral from too much privilege, not like... to sound like a meme with like, oh, white privilege or whatever, but mm-hmm. like the cush life of the U.S. has hit a, like, you know, today's empire, tomorrow's ashes kind of mm-hmm. Roman level. And that's really the problem is we're kind of, we're causing all of our own issues from too much of everything.
Well, that's a bummer.
I mean, how old are your kids?
16 and 12.
think about their clothing. Think about how many pieces of clothes they've thrown away in their life.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
When you kind of put it in a historical perspective of, you know what I mean? Like, yeah, I mean, it's not like Canada's off the hook on all the same shit. I mean,
No. We have our own problems up here as well. I mean, it is
first world problems that created electing a total fucking idiot.
Yeah. Well, this is sort of like Mike Judge sort of called it with the Idiocracy.
Isn't that crazy? Yeah. Everybody, you have to bring up that movie now.
I know.
Because it happened.
It's happening. It's only happening 300 years too soon, though. That's the problem.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Yeah, I haven't seen that movie, but it is one of my favorite movies. I haven't seen it in 5 years, but it's like, you should probably go watch it again because it says a lot, you know? It says a lot about what's going on with our world. I mean, we have our own little Trump up here in Ontario. His name's Doug Ford, and his brother was notoriously known for smoking crack on video because he was our Toronto's mayor. And that's his...
I know that guy.
Yeah, Rob Ford, his brother.
Rob something. He's Rob Ford. Blonde-haired guy, heavy.
Yeah. Yeah, and he died. Like, he died of cancer. But his brother is the premier of Ontario. He's our boss.
How about that?
Yeah, I know. And you know, we Canada is pretty supportive to arts and culture and whatnot, more than most places, but not as much as Europe, but regardless. But he's trying to pull back all of these sort of like these budgets to, he's trying to save money by getting rid of art. And that's not necessarily a good idea. I understand with streamlining and all that stuff, like, okay, let's not just give money for someone to make a ball of wax, but let's look back for a second and understand what art and culture does to people. It makes people just well-rounded and understanding and empathetic, and it makes them feel things. And when you try to pull it out of the system, that's where things go drastically wrong with people and humans. But
agreed.
Well, I want to play a song, but the problem is you probably won't hear it, but is that all right if I do that?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, cool. Hold on a second.
Can I talk real quick about the song that's coming next with the art print?
Yeah, for sure.
Okay, the next song I'm super stoked on, April 23rd, it's Freedom. It's a Rage Against the Machine song, which sounds silly, but it was redone kind of a power pop song into a jazz big band swing number.
Wow.
And it kind of and the reason I love it so much is that it kind of encapsulates what the project was about, right? Like, I saw Rage Against the Machine. I'm 42. I saw them when I was 15. They blew my fucking doors out. And as a bass player, I've played Rage Against the Machine riffs my whole life.
Yeah.
So doing a Rage Against the Machine cover was in kind of punk rock was just outdated in general, but then getting this jazz band, Eight First Chick, to merge with the guys from the singer from Habits and the singer from Van Saters and the drummer from Night Surf and the drummer from Lugosi, who played bass and guitar on that particular song. Anyway, it's my favorite. It was my favorite fucking weird hodgepodge. And then the art is Space Ghost out of Detroit. This woman, mother of two, who is also the driving creative force of Krillin, this crazy fucking Detroit band that dress up in like unbelievably overblown costumes on stage. Not like, you know, fucking Kiss, but like, you know, fucking monster heads, and they have a whole storyline, and they're at war with this other band that they're actually also related to. And the artist is Space Ghost, but it's her and her husband who just create awesome creative shit. And she did the art for that Freedom song, which I thought also was one of my favorite pieces that got done for the series.
Well, that's cool. You know what I got to do? I got to stop for a second. I got to add a track. All right. So we're back. Sorry, because I stupidly forgot to add the fucking audio track. Let's hear the Dad Rock song, Love Sick Bombs.
shelves a million drinks, all in pursuit of good times. Was born to booze, drink two, let's call and live our life with no plans. Fear of saying contentment was just the death of a desire, a great liar. Everything that takes him away longer makes a life at home that much harder.
So it's such a great song. It makes me feel that it's okay to be a dad. It's okay to get old. And it's okay to still be in punk rock.
I think so.
Mm-hmm.
The video, actually, if you watched it from the video, those are all, everyone who's in that video are like fucking badass lifers. Who toured and fucking raged and, you know, closed the bar down, people. The one dude's the drummer of, God, what's the name of his fucking band? Rob, but he was in the Vansaters. He was the drummer of Vansaters. He was in another band. And then the one guy is the singer of Habits.
Mm-hmm.
He flew up from, Atlanta to New York to sing on the record. He's got a band that he's kicking up in Atlanta.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I mean, hopefully the personal nature of it does connect with other. Sometimes I think like, oh, it's such a fucking like, oh, I wanted to put together this art and music thing that it's so personal to me that it won't connect with other people. Mm-hmm. But I'm hoping that the fact that like, oh, I loved this band from New York and the singer had his second kid and he moved to Atlanta and he flew up to sing on it. That kind of shit will connect with other people.
Oh yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Absolutely.
All the music I listen to are hometown heroes.
Yeah.
And I don't, you know, I mean, I'll always listen to what labels I follow sign, but the labels I follow now are like Aces and Eights and, you know, Brooklyn based, labels and my friends who fucking say, oh, you have to listen. Everything is word of mouth now.
Yeah. Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
They call it trusted connoisseurship. Hmm. There's so much shit out there now that all I listen to is recommendation.
Yeah, and we live in a good time where actually it's like going to the record store back in the 90s or in the 80s when that guy behind the record store, kind of like behind the counter, he would turn people on to stuff that was like,
totally.
Just for the sake of saying, oh, you got to get into this. It's weird and awesome at the same time. And
totally.
Yeah, and to be able to sort of, is there actually, like, even though I know we have Reddit and we have certain things that have like really knowledge-based points of view, but is there an actual website to go and say like, I'm really into these bands, what else you got for me?
I think everybody's doing that for us already.
Yeah, that's true.
I think I don't think we even have to do it. They already know.
That's true.
And they're probably trying to sell you a timeshare based on that and a bunch of other data points.
Oh yeah, yeah. No, they already have all my information from going on YouTube. They know how old I am.
Yeah, you don't have to enter anything. They already know.
This is true. It's funny you mentioned Brooklyn and you mentioned before Bottom of the Hill. I discovered a band called Babe the Blue Ox, who used to be from Brooklyn, at Bottom of the Hill in like 1992, because we were on tour and we had no shows, so we ended up driving to see a band at Bottom of the Hill. And this band, Babe the Blue Ox, man, oh my god, they were just the weirdest, coolest band. They had all weird tunings and stuff, and it was just back then, that just really turned my crank, you know what I mean? Because I never really thought I would discover this band. And I go, I got to buy something. And the guy in the tour, who is our merch guy, he's like, I got their tape. So I was like, well, what's the chances of that? You know what I mean? Like, what's the chances of having this tape that we listened to? And I bought the CD, and they ended up like going on tour and opening up for like Siba Matu and stuff. And I kind of became friends with them. But it's like, you know, when you see Bottom of the Hill and you see stuff like that, that's, it just brings back all that cool stuff.
Yeah, Bottom of the Hill was a super awesome time for me.
It's an important place. It definitely is.
Yeah, 100%. 100%. Mm-hmm. Bottom of the Hill and the Parkside. The Parkside kind of took over in terms of the fat record scene.
Yeah, I think I did a show there.
That was after I left.
Yeah.
But while I was there, you know, you could catch awesome fucking bands. And if you were somebody who was interested in just hustling like me, I always threw shows. You know, I could just reach out to bands, package up a show, pitch it to Bottom of the Hill and get it on. You know, like I booked the Swinging Utters just because I liked the Swinging Utters.
Yeah.
So I reached out to them and some other local bands that I liked their records that were out and put my own Swinging Odor show on with local bands I liked. And I was just super fucking stoked that like the Bottom of the Hill would just let me do it.
Yeah. Yeah. I think I did a show with, I was Sum 41's first tour manager, and we did a show at the Parkside, I think with Bowling for Soup and I can't remember the Lucky 13. That was it.
I saw Lucky 13.
Yeah.
I saw Lucky 13 open for, Good Charlotte and, Newfound Glory in Grand Rapids in 98. That's when you were.
Yeah. Yeah.
That was a 98 tour, I bet, right?
Yeah. That's totally it. We were, We did some shows actually with Newfound Glory. I think it Saves the Day and Face to Face. That's when I worked for, and we did this whole Face to Face thing on the, I think it was it? Yeah. We did Good Charlotte. We opened for Good Charlotte and then they opened for us, and that was a bit of a shit show, but, Yeah. So yeah, that's 98. That's when I was with Sum 41, or was it 2001? It was 2001. So it probably was before I was, Sum 41 were on tour, because they were on tour around 2001.
Lucky, I can't remember. Lucky 13 had a semi hit. I can't remember, but I remember they toured hard. Those guys tried hard to break through.
They were the first band that I saw that had like a PC with a GPS attached to it, and I thought, you guys are fucking wizards. Look at you guys! Like, you're living in the future, man. And when I saw them, like, yeah, I'm like, what? You mean this thing tells you how to get to places? Because every time I tour, it'd be always the big Atlas book. With a highlighter, and you would have to highlight your way to the venue or call and get directions. But when they had this thing that is like, are you kidding me? It tells you where you are on Earth. That's kudos to them.
Great band. Know how anybody else, I don't know how you get around anymore. Well, I've forgotten those days.
I have one story. Actually, I won't bore you with too many tour stories, but I was in Europe, and the very first time I went to Europe, we played this place in Munich. It took us 3 hours to find the venue. The second time we went back, it took us 2 hours to find the venue. The first time we went, we were opening for the Weaker Thans. The second time we went back, we were opening for, I can't remember who. So it would have been, I think it would have been Sum 41. The third time we went back.
What was the name of the band?
Foursquare. My band was called Foursquare. And we were opening, but we're lost. Every time we get to like fucking Munich, we would get lost and it would take us 3 hours to find the place. The fourth time I went, I had a band I put together in Italy, and we were opening for Sum 41 at this place called The Backstage, and I had a GPS, and I got there off the highway in 5 minutes. So many hours wasted trying to drive around Munich looking for this one club called The Backstage, and a GPS got me there in 5 minutes, and I was hooked ever since.
There's no other way to... My brain lives in my phone now. That and a million other things.
Yeah. No, it's interesting. My phone tells me when to wake up. It tells me information when I listen to shows on podcasts and stuff. It tells me what time it is. It sometimes makes phone calls. I text. It's like,
did you watch Russian Doll?
No. No.
That's a show worth watching. Her character's a little over the top in the beginning, but yeah. The story's awesome. It's 8 episodes. I highly recommend that show.
Yeah. Well, thanks so much for doing the show, John. I really appreciate it, and good luck with everything. I hope you have a very successful year, and have a good one. And that was Mr. John Redman. I had to do a fake ending because, like a big doofus, I accidentally erased the last like minute of the podcast. As a first, actually. 227 episodes, and I erased the goodbye part of it. Anyways, thanks so much, guys, for listening to the show. Thanks, John, for doing the show. Like I said, go check out Lovesick Bombs, which is the drawing music series. It's really cool. It's really neat to... just really neat to watch, and I will try to get Chai Pig on that. See, it's tough. I'll have to drive to Vancouver to do it, but I'll do it for sure. Thanks, everybody, for supporting the show. Thanks to BetterHelp.com, affordable private online counseling anytime, anywhere. BetterHelp.com/Apolog, and Apolog at the checkout when you do that. Thanks, Amazon shoppers. Thanks for Patreon. Thanks for patrons. And thanks to you. Thanks for listening to the show. Don't forget, Ride to Conquer Cancer. It's coming up in about a month and a bit, and it's going to be a bitch of a ride. So everybody, pledge for my Ride to Conquer Cancer, and thanks so much. So next week, I don't know if I got next week, probably be somebody, and it'll probably be a great episode. And it will be out on Monday, I promise, because Mondays have been tough these days. Trying to get, it was a long weekend of sorts, holiday, Easter, and all that good stuff. So everybody, have a great week. See you again.